Welcome to the Deep Dive. We've got some really interesting source material here today, all looking at Western sanctions against Russia, specifically this whole shadow fleet business and the G7 oil price cap.
That's right. And the big question we're trying to tackle in this deep dive based on these sources is pretty fundamental. Are these sanctions actually doing what they were meant to do?
Exactly. And the sources kick off with Russia's adaptation, which is frankly kind of stunning, this shadow fleet. It's grown massively, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Since early 2022, it's just exploded. We're talking fewer than 100 vessels initially. Now the sources say it's over 343 tankers, a huge jump.
That speed is incredible.
Yeah.
And the investment figure mentioned is what, around $10 billion?
Yep, about $10 billion poured into buying up these ships. And it seems to be working for them. You know, they're now handling something like 70% of all Russian seaborne oil exports.
70%? Wow. And the sources dig into where these ships actually came from, which is surprising.
It really is. Get this. Over 40% of the new tankers joining this fleet, they were apparently bought from sellers in the EU. The sources specifically point to Greek ship owners playing a big role.
Hold on. EU sellers helping build a fleet designed to get around EU sanctions. That's quite something.
It adds a layer of complexity, definitely. And these aren't exactly new ships either. The sources mention 85% of the fleet is over 15 years old. Plus, they're often sailing under flags of convenience. Panama, Liberia, places like that.
Okay, so that sets the stage for the other big piece, the G7 oil price cap. Remind us, what was the core idea there?
Right, so the price cap, introduced back in December 2022, the idea was, well, twofold. First, cut Russia's oil revenue. Second, keep Russian oil flowing onto the global market to, you know, prevent huge price spikes. They set the cap at $60 a barrel.
So 60 bucks was the limit. How has that actually played out, according to the data in these sources?
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. The data shows Russian oil has averaged around $64 a barrel. So consistently above the cap.
Above the cap. Okay.
Yeah. And that discount Russia had to offer compared to Brent crude, it used to be huge, like over $35 right after the invasion. Now, it's shrunk to less than $10 a barrel.
So the financial pressure from the discount is easing off significantly.
It seems so. And this connects directly back to the shadow fleet, doesn't it? The sources basically argue that this fleet is what allows Russia to bypass the cap and keep generating substantial revenue. They estimate about $9.4 billion in extra revenue just in 2024, purely from evading the cap.
An extra $9.4 billion.
Yeah.
That's not small change.
Not at all. And it fits the bigger picture the sources paint. Moscow's total oil revenues actually went up by about 5% between 2023 and 2024. They're pulling in roughly $16.4 billion a month now.
Wow, $16.4 billion monthly and increasing year on year despite the sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
That really puts the effectiveness question into sharp focus.
It does. A huge part of that story is where the oil is going. Russia's been incredibly successful at redirecting exports, mainly to Asia. The sources highlight India, actually. Yeah, India overtook China as the top buyer in July 2024. They imported a record 2.07 million barrels per day. That accounted for like 44% of India's total oil imports.
That's a staggering shift. The numbers on India's total purchases are eye-watering, too. Something like $140 billion in the 2023-24 fiscal year. A 56-fold increase.
Exactly. A 56-fold increase compared to before the invasion. China is still a massive buyer, too, of course, taking around 2.44 million barrels daily. But India's rise is dramatic.
So how are they managing all this logistically? The sources mention specific evasion techniques, right?
They do. Things like switching off their AI transponders, the tracking systems to hide movements, lots of ship-to-ship transfers out at sea, which helps obscure the oil's origin, and frequently changing the listed owners or managers of the vessels to dodge sanctions lists.
It sounds like a real cat and mouse game. And what about enforcing the price cap itself? Are the sanctions actually landing on these ships?
Well, the sources suggest enforcement is facing real challenges. For example, they point out that out of the top 20 tankers known to be carrying Russian crude, only 7 have actually been sanctioned.
Only 7 out of 20.
Right. And even for ships that do get designated, it's not always permanent. The sources mentioned 23 tankers that were sanctioned but managed to get back into service after just a short time.
So the enforcement isn't quite sticking, it seems.
That appears to be the case based on this data. The overall assessment coming from these sources is pretty clear. Russia's adaptation, especially with this shadow fleet and the pivot to Asia, is, well, often staying ahead of Western enforcement efforts.
And there was a statistic about how much revenue the cap could have potentially cut.
Yes, a crucial one. Even if the price cap had been enforced perfectly, the estimate is it would have only cut Russia's export revenues by about 8% since it started. And maybe even more telling, only around 34% of Russian seaborne crude is actually transported by tankers that are even subject to the cap, meaning those relying on Western insurance or services.
So a huge chunk isn't even covered by the main mechanism.
Pretty much.
Okay, so pulling all this together from the sources, what's the main takeaway for you? It sounds like it really makes bag.
I think that's fair. The sources definitely show the sanctions created initial pressure, but they also detail this really sophisticated Russian response. Building the fleet, finding new buyers, using evasive tactics, which has significantly, cushioned the blow to their oil income.
Right. So the picture isn't that the sanctions did nothing, but that their goal of really slashing that oil revenue hasn't fully materialized because of how Russia adapted.
It certainly seems to highlight just how difficult it is to enforce these kinds of financial measures effectively when you have a determined state actor and a flexible global market.
It really does. Which leaves us, and you listening, with a pretty big question to think about. Given this clear ability to adapt, building fleets, shifting markets, dodging rules as detailed in these sources, what does this whole situation tell us about how effective these kinds of targeted financial sanctions can really be in the future in our very interconnected and adaptable global economy? Something to definitely mull over.